Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Stevie Ward.
Hello.
And joined by Cy White.
Hello. Not quite as good as
Stevie Ward, you should clarify your ability to do these various voices. Very professional.
Thank you. Yes,
history of professional things.
I do voiceover for some.
Do you want to do the one that you do all the time for us?
Yeah. GIFGAF sponsors entertainment on E4.
Yeah. Woo! That'll have popped up, hopefully, most of the United Kingdom at that point, who have been aware of these things. We thought, why not do a news roundup podcast? There are many things going on in the industry. We'll talk a little bit about the state of Xbox, some stuff happening in regards to Phil Spencer doing an interview with Polygon, talking about the future of Xbox, talking about Xbox handhelds and things like that. But I want to talk about microtransactions. I feel like the pressure used to be on microtransactions for so long. And recently there was a whole debate coming out of Dragon's Dogma 2, kind of coming out of the way Capcom have rolled microtransactions into their single player games, where you can fundamentally ignore them, but at the same time, you have to kind of accept that they're in there. And I'm just curious about where both of you are at in regards to the way that microtransactions have infiltrated games over the years. I'm someone who, for the most part, was like, F this stuff, it sucks, it's just greed, there's nothing else to it. But at the same time, I recognize that the longer a game goes on, you want to make sure the devs are getting paid, you want to make sure the lights stay on and whatever. And I wonder about the different sides of that coin. The Dragon's Dogma 2 stuff, or the Capcom approach, was the same thing in Devil May Cry 5 and Resident Evil 4 Remake, mm-hmm. where they were so fundamentally optional. And even in Dragon's Dogma's case, you can't, as far as I know, access them in the game itself. And the game doesn't offer them to you, etc. So it's a weird middle ground where, like, we almost have to admit defeat kind of thing if we're just going to be like, well, I guess they're in there if you want them. But Stevie, what do you think of the whole thing?
I think generally speaking, if you're going to charge for content, it should be content that doesn't affect gameplay for multiplayer. Mm-hmm. So no play to win, mm-hmm. no I paid mm-hmm. $500 for a better tank than you type mm-hmm. thing.
What do you think of the single player wrinkle of that, where it's like you can pay for a fast travel stone?
I don't see the point.
Same.
Like, I don't see why you should have to do that. I mean, when we were working on Guitar Hero Live, so that was probably the worst microtransaction decision Activision ever made. Mm-hmm. You know, they decided to charge players like $1 for every play of a game that they wanted
to. Yeah, it's like a rental thing.
Yeah, like you got
that
rent
weird song store thing.
Yeah, yeah, it was just you don't understand why gamers game and how they wanted to play that particular game. So, you know, it just kind of, you want to do Through the Fire and the Flames over and over and over and over again. I'm not spending 50 quid to do that in my room while I'm eating Wotsits. Like, there's no, it's not like a ride at a fairground. So I really don't see the point in doing that.
Yep.
I think if it's for something that's a cosmetic or something, you know, there can be really good things. For example, like when League of Legends did their Darkstar Cho'Gath campaign, mm-hmm. you know, you could pay for the skin and all the money went to charities and that made the world better. You didn't have to do it. It was something that brought the community together. And to be fair, I think it raised like millions. So
yeah.
I think there's definitely good reasons to do that kind of thing. I just think it shouldn't affect any kind of competitive online gameplay. And I think that gatekeeping, that kind of thing, is weird. But if you want to charge for a new level, or you know, the devs have put out new content, we're going to charge you for it like an expansion. Mm-hmm. Why not?
I always look at No Man's Sky and Hello Games, where like, the fandom are screaming at them to let them pay them more. Like in No Man's Sky, you get so many content expansions across the last 8 years now for the same entry fee. But Si, what do you think of all of it?
Pretty much in the same boat, really. Yeah, I mean, it obviously it depends on
what game we're talking about and the levels of it, I do think it's really interesting that essentially some of these single player microtransactions are paying to play the game less.
Yes.
Like in the case of a Fast Travel Stone or Resident Evil 4 Remake had the microtransactions added after release, which was like you get the premium ticket or whatever it was
There's
called,
loads,
which like maxes
yeah.
out your yeah. gun's ability so you don't have to work for that, mm-hmm. which you could do in game. You just play it over and over again and get the coins to pay for it or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or you can pay real coin and skip it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, paying to play the game you've spent loads of money on less is a little odd, but also yeah, same thing. It's like it's not really affecting anyone except that one single player, so generally speaking I don't have an issue with it.
Yeah.
I know Dragon's Dogma 2, there is some weirdness to it. I haven't dug too deeply into it. From mm-hmm. what I understand, you can pay to change your character customization.
You can bypass the... It's the same as Resi 4. Like, you can bypass the stuff that you would otherwise just, like, build up the currency to buy in-game anyway.
Oh, okay. Because what I heard was like, oh, if you want to change the way your character looks, you have to pay now.
Ooh,
it's like, it's not like the Dead or Alive. Do you remember we have to pay to change the hair
color? Oh, the hair color, yeah.
Stuff like that. And it obviously makes me think of the Metal Gear Solid pay for a save slot. Like, as long as it's not... which is obviously absurd. If it's not, like, denying core obvious features that should be in this game, we're not blocking those behind a microtransaction. Mm. It's fine. Whatever. I don't care if someone paid to fast travel. It's going to affect my experience.
It's such a weird thing. Yeah, same. Like, I was always like, okay, this stuff is so fundamentally optional. I'm never going to buy into this stuff. And, like, the game isn't stopping me with a pop-up saying, well, you know, if you spend 50 pence, you can do this right now.
Yes, exactly that as well.
Thankfully, it's not that. But I think it's interesting looking at the argument for the people going, like, the whole supply and demand thing and being like, well, the fact that the coding is in there to facilitate that stuff, you have to tweak something on the game side to at least incentivize it at some point if this is a future business model. But Stevie, you know way more about game dev and game making than
I mean, I was working at CCP during Monocle Gate.
Right, okay. What was that?
When they were bringing in new characters that collect like a character creator and stuff like that, and you could, and they were going to charge something crazy to put a monocle on. And,
really?
And the community let us know. And we didn't do that. And, you know, there's some things that are just so obvious. And I think that mainly, I mean, as a community manager, you already know what's going to piss people off. So I think if these decisions get made, it's probably because they're not listening to whatever the CMs are going, they're not going to want to do that.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to hate that.
But I think the rule, isn't the rule just don't be a dick?
Well, that's the thing, right? It always seems to be like if the industry could talk, it's saying, what can we get away with? It's always, let's see what we can get away with. And you say, like, everyone pushes back and they go, okay, sorry, I guess the line is going to be here today.
Just don't be a dick. Like, I totally get it. If you've spent like loads of time QA testing a brand new vehicle or a really awesome outfit or something like that took time and money to make, we want to give you more of these. Mm-hmm. But in order to do that, we need to pay the designers and the art people and the riggers and the animators to make this happen. Mm-hmm. I get it. If it's like and you know, for literally walking into a different part of a room, you're going to charge you. Nah, you're being a dick.
Yeah,
I mean, you know.
I think that's always the thing. I feel like everyone is always very aware of where the line is. But it's interesting with the Dragon's Dogma stuff, or just the fact that Capcom have been doing this since 2019, and then like with Resi 4, they put stuff in 2 weeks after launch. Dragon's Dogma launched with it, and it was in the review embargo stuff, but it was inside like the spoiler section, stuff like that. It was a bit harder to go look for if you're reviewing the game. But that idea of like, is this just the future of it? And then getting used to that in single player games, and it's there if you want it, etc. I just think it's interesting compared to the horse armor debate, which is a bit of a DLC thing back when it was Oblivion. And then you've got the spike in the worst of it around about 2017 with Battlefront 2 and Shadow of War and For Honor and everything. And then just trying to accept that it's like, how do we actually fund the games long term if it's not like this? I don't want this style. You know, if I was going to do a microtransaction, it would be something more meaningful, I guess. But yeah, Stevie, do you have any thoughts on like the other ways things could be monetized?
I mean, a return to subscription service feels weird. A way of doing it would be to subscribe to a platform or a particular game sort of creator and then be able to get all updates for that creator for free or that series of games for free or something like that. I mean, you know, the days of MMOs where people just, you know, 18 quid came out of your bank account every month are kind of done, but it did work because you got all the content. You knew you were going to get like 4 expansions a year for free.
Right.
And there was a safety in that. Whereas I think that, you know, I guess maybe people are playing more different games where they're not maybe necessarily going to fork over loads on one game.
Mm-hmm. But, what's like GTA Plus got that monthly subscription service. That's one of the only ones that I can think of.
Yeah, and there's, you know, that's kind of good. And then there's optional ways of doing it. But yeah, I don't see it going back to subscription service because I just don't think we're wired that way anymore. I think we're more likely to do like Game Pass style streaming stuff where, you know, that it just lets you have the option for anything within that particular engine or that particular game dev or that particular world.
Yeah, I wonder if there's something in that where it's like you pay a microtransactional fee as access to all the little tweaks that could potentially be added, like the entire list of the Dragon's Dogma 2 stuff, whatever it is. So yeah, you pay that a month to have access to all this additional content.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is. Like
for the people who really want it,
And it'll be interesting to see who tries that or who tries what, because you said supply and demand, Scott. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Like these companies just put something down and see what happens, and if people go for it, then that's the right answer. So yeah, it depends on how they track that company to company and who's going to crack it. It'll be really interesting to see over the next few years because we're a weird space in terms of money and the transferring of that between companies and consumers, and everything's going up and the costs of games are going up and the amount of people making games is going down because they're all being fired. And it's a crazy thing, and it's going to be a crazy thing for a few years. And yeah, whoever cracks that microtransactional nut of what the next, that's a weird turn of phrase.
There's so much gold in that nut.
The microtransactional nut.
That's going to be the winner, I think. That's
It's just that thing about like talking about the way the industry is today, the way that it used to be, the industry that we grew up on. And like I said, you can draw a direct comparison between the reaction to the horse armor, which I think was only like £2.75 or something like that.
I don't know if it was that cheap. I maybe not that cheap. £6, but
okay, but like either way, it wasn't £20 for Tifa in the Battle Royale for Final Fantasy VII.
Yes, yeah.
And trying to compare those things and trying to make ends meet and how do you actually fund bigger games and things like that. And it's just weird looking at something like Dragon's Dogma 2, which is like an immaculate single player RPG. And then it just has all this stuff bolted onto it that's like there if you want it, but they're not really going to push you towards it.
Yeah.
And it's just this almost like acknowledgement that there are the whales out there who have so much disposable income, who will pay their way through the game, but the rest of us don't acknowledge that at all. And it's just this assumption on, at least to me, from the dev side, the studio side, of like, it's like I said, it's there if you want it, and those people will spend all that money and everyone else can just kind of have a nice time not thinking about it.
It's also the security of it. If you think about, you know, as you're saying, like there's been loads of layoffs this year, people aren't being able to retain their studio workers past a certain expansion or past a game ship, or we didn't know how much money that game would make. The thing that this was sort of subscription service or the return to that would actually do is be like, we know we've got like 300,000 subscribers. We know that we're going to have that in the bank at the end of the month, every month. You know, we're charting it up and down. We know that that means even if we don't do loads of stuff, or if we have a slow year, or if game number three doesn't ship, we're going to be able to retain our staff. And that would be a nice, secure thing to know that. Like, I mean, and to be fair, working on MMOs and people like Jagex and will have this where they know, you know what, we know that we've got this one game that's like churning over this much stuff. We know we're always going to have all of our staff in a safe place in order for us to do our R&D on other projects or other things. So it does have a knock-on effect. I know as gamers, we don't want to spend any money on anything and we should get everything for free, but...
even then, I think like it's like if you do end up forking out the £70, the full price thing, then there is that assumption of like, I shouldn't have to pay any more.
Right.
Because like historically the prices used to be higher, but like there is that assumption of like, if my entry fee is premium, then how dare you ask for any more from me?
That's the line again from back in the day where it's like, it's additional content that's been created after the fact. Like if you're denying me, you know, locking me out of stuff that was clearly on the disc and, you know, Street Fighter and all that business, that's a different thing. And I realize what I just described before now, it clicked in my brain for everyone who's listening and shouting. I basically just described the Battle Pass.
I was thinking that's a version
broader,
of it. Yeah.
But for like a broader thing.
It's live service. It's looking at games as a live service. And this is something, again, in the last 10 years that has evolved where games go past their day one patch. You can patch your game past a general release where people are expecting that if a game is broken, you're going to do at least 8 patches to fix the thing, whatever it is afterwards. Mm. And then it's going to keep going like that unless you're Nintendo. But you know, that's what we actually just kind of expect now for free as well. Whereas, you know, in the past, maybe you would have to, you know, if quality of life, we call them quality of life updates, should you have to pay for that to fix your game? Probably not. No. If it was a new level or a new spaceship or a brand new arena, Probably would, but then you think, oh, well, you probably should pay for a quality of life update if it's come.
I think it's interesting thinking about the idea of like atomizing and monetizing every individual component of what would otherwise be a solid game released in a previous generation. Like you took one of the Mass Effects or the original Final Fantasy VII or whatever, and then segmented all those items out and just attached a price tag to each thing, and then your character goes down.
Do you want your game to run smoothly? That'll be £5. Would you like red hair? That'll be two.
Well, that's the thing, right? So I was like, like performance stuff feels like it should always be free. Like you pay for a product, it should work. Kind of thing, but like that idea of like your character goes down in a Final Fantasy and there's a price tag for a Phoenix down. If you just had the money right now, you could revive the character. Like that's kind of what Ever Crisis is like on mobile.
But then on the longer running MMOs, like some of the philosophy behind that is as live service is that this has a really old UI. It's on from old graphics cards. You know, we can do better. We can make this game better. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily fixing anything that ain't broken, but it's a brand new art refresh or something like that. Like why shouldn't you pay for that? Because they put the work into making.
I think
you know, and I think it can be a mixture of different things. But again, I just think you just know when you're taking the piss and when you're not.
Yeah, I think like though the Capcom approach at the minute just seems to be how do we itemize the game that is already finished? Like I view it as the development is largely done, and then it's like okay, which bits do we pull out of here? Like the weapon tickets or whatever in Resident Evil, they feel so fundamentally optional in regards to paying for your way through that stuff. That it feels like it would have had to have been added after the core functionality was already done. Yeah. But yeah, an ongoing conversation, and I feel like Dragon's Dogma 2 became this like lightning rod for it all over again, which is interesting that it didn't really blow up around RE4 that much. Like, and that was added 2 weeks after
launch. It did for about a day, I think.
Yeah.
People were angry for a day and then they got over it.
Yeah, which like this is kind of simmering a bit, but it's like, it kind of revived that idea of like, if you think, like I said, think of something like a Mass Effect 2 or something that was sold to you as a full complete game and then be like, you can just see it from the business point of view of being like, well, what if we separate all these elements out and then like just charge for them separately. We would have made 50 times more money. And it's like, that's an interesting way to view the viability of single player games in an increasingly live service multiplayer pushed industry. And like, I don't want all my single player games to have all these things bolted onto them, but at the same time, I'm always just going to ignore them. So like, I can get all the people who have the more disposable income can get stuck into all that stuff, but it's never going to be me. I'm never going to pay for my levels or my weapon tickets or whatever it is.
I mean, another advance might be, you know, player generated content and stuff like that. If you look at something like The Sims, where the stuff packs are ridiculous, it's like £9 for like 5 hats. Why would I do that when the game is open for modding? The modding community on The Sims is incredible. I can download 8 billion Gucci hats for free if I want to, or pay a member of the community that's put in a load of time to do this, either alpha or not alpha, you know, quality. I mean, I would just rather do that. So it's one of these things as well where you could go completely the other way and say, we're not going to make any more changes to this. However, our community are going to make loads of content.
And it makes the game more worthwhile for you to jump into if you haven't already. Look at this. You pay for the game, but you also get access to everything that everyone else is making as well.
That's kind 100%. Of the Roblox approach.
Yeah. We were doing VR today. It reminds me of Beat Saber. And as far as I understand it, the devs are very much open to the modding community there where people just chart whatever the hell song they want.
Right.
Yeah. And it's just like, you can pretty much... If you want to mod your VR headset, you get access to all of that too.
I mean, it's kind of like the magic of when Second Life... Oh my God, I can't believe I said Second Life.
Second Life.
I'm very, very, very old.
In 2024.
Back in 2004, there was a game called Second Life.
And it was nothing on PlayStation Home.
My cousin was a lingerie designer in Second Life.
Did they get paid well?
Yes, she did.
Good.
She did. And you think that's kind of amazing where you could have a shop in World of Warcraft where you sell pies and they're pies that you've done the graphics for and the ingredients for, and you can just make a living off of doing that. Mm. And, you know, she was making good money doing that and a couple of other things that are too blue to mention for this podcast, but she was making a living, you know, she was making enough money off of doing that, for selling lingerie to fund her life. And why not? And you could have a whole world where that's the case. Mm-hmm. And as long as it wasn't, I mean, there's complications with real money versus in-game money and what's worth what. But, I mean, there's an opportunity there to really engage a community and a creator community.
Yeah, there's definitely like a genre-specific approach as well. Like things like that where I'm sure it was Bethesda ended up hiring one of their modders who made one of the expansions for Skyrim. But like I said, an ongoing conversation. Let's talk about Sonic Heroes side, Stevie. Sonic Heroes, one of the most beloved games from, I think, 2003?
One of the most most beloved.
I'm not a fan, but every time I mention Sonic Heroes, one, people remember the song, and two, Dan Durkin appears from somewhere and says, oh my God, I love that game. Yeah. So Sonic Heroes has its fans. I'm not one of them, but at the same time, we're apparently getting a Sonic Heroes remake. This comes from reliable leaker Midori, who apparently has leaked quite a lot of things in regards to Sega, Atlas, Persona, etc. in the past, corroborating a report from website Universo Nintendo, saying his Sonic Heroes remake is in production, and this comes after the Sonic Generations remake just got announced as well, adding Shadow the Hedgehog content. Shadow is also in Sonic Heroes, so the fact that Sonic 3 the movie is about to spotlight Shadow, there's a whole bunch of Shadow-based business about to descend across
Shadow-y
the next
year.
Year or so. No, there's not the Shadow game just yet, though. Just gotta hang on.
And
maybe we'll get that.
Might be a bit of a step too far. Maybe.
Yeah, I think that's there. We've gone through the looking glass. If
yes,
someone spends the money remaking Shadow.
Sonic Heroes, I'm with you. Not a fan, personally. I know there are a lot of people that do like it, but for me, it's the beginning of the sort of slope where Sonic really went downhill. I really like Adventure 1 and 2. They are a little bit janky in places.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of love clearly put into those games, a lot of effort and a lot of personality and lots of good bits and pieces. But Sonic Heroes was kind of a mess, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, this is one of the rare remakes where you go, actually, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You're not just remaking the beloved entry because it will sell well. Mm-hmm. This game could actually do with some tightening up.
I'm curious.
Make it play properly.
That's the thing. Like, they've made so many strides with how Sonic controls. And like me and Si are big Sonic fans. Stevie, we've never asked you about Sonic. Where are you at on the old
just so
blue blur?
I don't partake, actually. In
I'm full, thank you.
I'm a PC. I've never partook in the blue fast thing. however, like, just so I'm clear on what this news is,
yes.
Are they retconning a past game and putting Shadow in it?
No, they're remaking, they're remastering. It's more of a remaster in terms of the Sonic Generations remaster.
Okay.
And they're adding Shadow to that, but not with guns, just more of a reskin, just playing around with Shadow in that game. But that already got announced. The thing that's been leaked is a Sonic Heroes remaster slash remake. We don't know how far that's going to go. Mm. I wonder, to Si's point, about whether they're going to remake the physics of it, tighten it up, etc. Because so far, the remasters that we've got are Sonic Colors, which just plays exactly the same.
Yeah, they're just kind of ports.
Yeah, and then Generations look like it was the same, but with a bit of Shadow on it. So I assume it'll actually mostly play the same.
Yeah, hopefully it's not just a port, but yeah, you're right. They've set the precedent. That's all they've really done. They've never remade a Sonic game. There's always a new one every couple
of
years
wise.
Anyway.
Because Frontiers plays really well, like in fits and spots, but like every now and then, fits and starts, it can be really spot on.
I think the idea of them finally making some kind of Sonic remake, and of all things picking Sonic Heroes, which again, I'm all for, in a strange way, is again telling of they don't know what the hell they're doing with Sonic the Hedgehog.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Sonic Mania, the fan game sort of thing, comes out. Everyone loves it. After that, they have no idea what they're doing.
No. Did you
Sonic
see...
Frontiers was okay, and then they've bottled it again with Sonic Superstars, apparently, is kind of just sort of average.
I forgot that even happened. Yeah, that game was pretty bad. They are doing that Fall Guys game. I don't know if either of you have seen that. They're doing a Sonic Fall Guys, where it's just like 100 Sonics, and they're all different colours. Oh. And it's like, Sega always just go like, hey, what's working today? Okay, that's the thing. Let's do one of them. We'll have it out by next month. And turn it all around. I'm still waiting for Sonic Survivors at some point. I'm going to do a Vampire Survivors stuff. But yeah, apparently we're getting Sonic Heroes. Let's talk about Xbox stuff. A whole bunch of interviews coming out of the Game Developers Conference where Phil Spencer's been talking to various outlets, including Polygon, talking about the state of Xbox, the way the industry is overall, the viability for consumer, the way consumer spending habits have gone across the last few years, and talking about how the Xbox plan is, we talked about this loads before, is the idea of having an Xbox app just on your TV or, you know, some sort of streaming device, just an Xbox library of titles available wherever you are on Game Pass or whatever. He says a lot of that is down to Gen Z spending habits and Gen Z's general approach to media in general. The idea being, or he's saying, that they do not care about exclusivity. They only really care about the accessibility of various things. And he thinks that goes for most people in this day and age as well, which is an interesting thing. We'll talk about that a little bit. What do you think about like consoles going away, or like that idea of just I access my games on my phone or wherever? Like you just pick up a controller and play it through the TV.
I've changed my mind.
Okay.
Because I used to be like, I want physical games all the time, and I want to go up to my little treasure chest and smell them at night. And like, and honestly,
Stevie's impression of me.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
And me, to be honest. Yeah.
And like, I've kind of changed. I think that it's good. I think it makes sense that people don't care about the console wars anymore. Why would you?
Oh, yeah.
This is a generation that grew up with apps on their phone as kids. Like, it doesn't make sense that you'd all be on a different phone using different apps
and not
be able to talk to each other. It's a good mentality to have. And I think, again, as long as it's fair and nothing gets locked out, it's okay. I just worry about the preservation of those games that are on those online services.
Same.
So there's the question of ownership of what is on there and what the deals are for the devs. Mm-hmm. Because the deals could be weird. It could be just like, yeah, we'll put your game on our service, but only for a year. And if it doesn't sell, then it's gone.
Literally gone forever.
And then it's gone forever. So I think that, you know, legally speaking, especially for indie devs that tend to make either these incredible hits within 2 seconds, like Among Us, that just kind of goes crazy. Or, you know, just something that just wants to be on, but it isn't like crazy, crazy exciting for everybody in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I do worry that they're going to take these deals really quickly to just be on a service. Oh, yeah, but we're going to be on Game Pass. We're going to be on this and nowhere else. Or, I don't know, like, I worry more about the indies that they stand to lose more than if they just stuck the game on Steam.
Yeah, I'll throw in as well that, like, the whole idea of having the live stream approach, like some sort of digital marketplace only, to me, takes away from the viability for the consumer to pick different pricing models. Like it would completely get rid of the trade-in markets whatsoever. Mm. And they've largely gone away anyway. But you would have to pay whatever the digital price point was. You would have to pay into whatever bundle deals there were, etc. And I wonder about that because I don't trust the industry to do right by the consumer on that level. Like we talked about that before, about how much they can get away with. And there's Nintendo an interesting example because their games never go down in price. Like to this day, Breath of the Wild is full price. Like it just always is. And I imagine that if that model kind of translated over to various other platforms, then everything is always full price because where else are you going to go? And I wonder about that as like a viability thing going forward. There's more to this in terms of Xbox stuff, but Si, what do you think of the app, all Xboxes everywhere approach?
I feel like we've been talking about this forever. Like
it's definitely
always
their overall
thing, hasn't it? And the problem with it is it doesn't quite work unless everyone else gets involved as well.
Yeah,
you can't
that's
have
true.
Xbox is the app, and now PlayStation is the only console in the game. It's like that's a weird sort of disconnect there. I mean, yeah, I'm kind of sort of against it because the lack of physical stuff and all the reasons that you just said and the price gating and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think there's some truth in what he's saying about people's sort of adjustment now in terms of the so-called console war and to some extent anyway. I think people want to have cake and eat it in a way because everybody would like access to everything and they kind of hate that things are exclusive. But then you still see comments everywhere you go where it's Xbox versus Sony Pony and all this stuff. Yeah. And still Android versus iPhones. And have iMessage? Which I don't know what that is, but like, you know.
I'm an Android man.
To be fair, technology isn't there for this yet. Like I was talking to some people from Vodafone, someone from Xbox, like just a couple of weeks ago on this. And, you know, the latency thing is still a thing. There's still a massive consumer perception that if you're just playing something streamed from a TV, that it's not going to be accurate. So already you're multiplying play games are out. I don't want to play Fortnite and not know whether or not my hits are going.
Yeah, for sure.
So there's a long way to go when it comes to the interwebs and what you can actually stream and how good streaming is before we would even get to a point where that is possible. Mm. But I do love the idea of being able to me play on my phone whilst you're playing on the TV. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's the thing. Only very recently I got a Gamesir G8, which is, it kind of looks like a DualSense. It's like a big chunky controller and you slot your phone in the middle of it and it just streams off like PlayStation, Xbox, whatever. I know they've been around for a while, but I was so the same as you. Oh, like that general conversation of like, oh, I'm going to be able to tell that it's streaming or it's not going to feel good or whatever. And thankfully it's spot on. Like, nice. I think some of that will be home Wi-Fi dependent. Like, I have like a 200 meg connection or something. So like, that's all good, but that side of the technology, like, I don't trust it. There's another part of some of the interviews that he's been doing about making an Xbox, a dedicated Xbox portable system, like a dedicated handheld. And the example that he gives is that he was on his way to GDC, playing his Lenovo system on the plane. And it's like, but he then jumps to the whole idea of like, oh, it'd be awesome if I could just get my Xbox working, all these different things. I own all these games, play them on the Xbox, but in a plane. And like, we just don't have the infrastructure for that at all. Like, workable Wi-Fi to play.
Standard Xbox now, where they just, and they've been doing this for years, where they just are thinking way too far ahead instead of what's going on actually in front of them. And they've had this before where it was like, you know, we're thinking about the next console and the new one's only just come out or whatever. And we get all these internal reports and leaked emails and stuff where they're specking up the next one and the newest one isn't even out or whatever. It's just like stupid stuff like that. And this is a problem. And I appreciate that they are trying to be forward thinking. They're looking into the future, and it's important from a business practical standpoint. And it's going to be cool when all this stuff works fluidly, as you guys have said, but that's not a guarantee all the time. I'm not sure if I said this before, and I apologize if I have. My latest TV purchase has Game Pass on it, so I haven't given it a chance yet to get in stuck into it. I do want to see what it feels like, you know, to Bluetooth the controller to the TV and just stream anything from Minecraft all the way up to something really high demanding and see how it goes.
Do you know what I like though? I do like it when they all get together. Like, I like it that I could, if I'm on Amazon, I also get Twitch points and something off my Deliveroo. Like, I feel
the network.
Do you know what? I feel like I could get really into that where like all of your stuff is linked and whichever biz dev guy does the right amount of deals or eats the right amount of steak with the right amount of people.
Oh, God.
Right, do you know what I mean? Like, if you knew that, like, if you were playing Call of Duty and you would get free DLC on that, and then that would mean you'd get free delivery on delivery.
I was about to
say. And then that would mean that, you know, you could get, like, £2 off an Amazon rental, and then that would mean that your next delivery of a book or whatever is free.
We've kind of got bits of that with, like, the Xbox reward system where you'll get, like, here's £5 off a clothing outlet or something like
companies
that.
Companies are good at doing it when it comes to, like, people perks and people rewards. But if that was more connected to video games, I'd be doing all the time. And then you'd get that kind of purchase urgency of, oh, but if I spend £40 more, then my whole delivery for next month is free.
Oh my God.
And then
they would lock you in. Yeah.
It would be amazing. And then whichever company or whatever console or whatever thing locked in the best thing, you know, they'd all do Just Eat. And you'd be like, you'd have to choose a side anyway, because of the content, but because of the perks around it.
Yeah.
You get £5 off River Island. Oh, well, I'm
going to play on Xbox. Totally.
But, you know, I'm on PlayStation, so I get Marks and Spencer.
It's like a nightmare. I mean, it would definitely have its, but the thing is, all
lifestyle.
Of this
lifestyle. It's a lifestyle service.
But this
That's
is all
change.
Like metaverse thinking, where it's like, let's lock you down and let you have like
dirty.
Like all access to like the 10 things you're into, and they're all connected and they all talk to each other, and you walk through a digital space and access digital price points for a set amount of money, and like that's everything talks to everything else, but you never really think about your consumer rights amongst any of it.
This crazy visual is that you win a game on Fortnite and then you open the front door and there's KFC delivered to you. So like, there's my chicken dinner.
Oh my God, what was that KFC button? There was a button. Oh God. There was a button you could push that would order KFC.
The KFC console. Do you remember
there was that as well. Some attempts at this stuff have been done in the past. But yeah, that general idea that Phil Spencer seems to have, or Xbox seems to have, about this utopian view where you can just click a button and all your games are right there, regardless of wherever you are. I think that's interesting. And I get whiffs of that when I try the streaming systems at home, because that is as simple as just like putting my phone to the side and playing the games. Mm. But his example of just working on an aircraft on a plane, that I don't believe that yet. I've never had 50 meg Wi-Fi on a plane before.
Or like when everyone hasn't downloaded the game that they want to, and then everyone's
doing at the same time. So could the people in seat 5G stop downloading this game?
Yeah, you're lagging the whole connection.
Lagging everyone down and I'm trying to play Fortnite.
Maybe they have like an Xbox plane. Maybe they start getting into planes at some point and
yeah,
you get on
that. Oh, yeah. And you could do matchups in multiplayer with whoever's in the plane next to you and be like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Our
yeah.
plane's better than that plane. Yeah. The other side of this, which just keeps coming up, and this is part of a write-up over on GameIndustry.biz by Christopher Dring, also saying that coming out of GDC, apparently he talked to various developers and they don't think this is the way forward, according to his report. Dring said that Xbox is in real trouble as a hardware manufacturer. I heard it from a very prominent company and one not so prominent that Xbox's performance in Europe is just flatlining. One major company who released a big game last year said, I don't know why we bothered supporting it. And I think it's interesting here because all of these wider infrastructural changes dance around the fact that the games aren't there. And it's like, you can't deny like the sales figures of the system, of the Xbox brand, et cetera. And I wonder how much that matters if the tech is cool enough.
They are building a house without foundations.
Yes.
Basically. And it's all going to crumble down when they don't have that thing in the middle that everyone flocks towards, which is, where are the games? Which has the better games? Where can I have access to my games? Mm-hmm. I try that with Game Pass. But yeah, what makes that so special compared to... We just talk about, oh, you know, an Xbox where I can download games on a plane or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just buy a Switch and a cartridge, mate. Dumb. It already exists. Technology's already there. Sorry.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's, yeah.
So, Stevie, rather, what do you think of this stuff?
Of?
The utopian view of everything being available ever. Just games, games, games. But, like, are they ever good enough?
Great. I don't see the problem in blue sky thinking and thinking about being able to play your game anywhere you are.
True.
And then, you know, you're at somebody else's house, but you can literally just put your next level of, you know, Baldur's Gate up on the screen. Like, everyone wants to be able to do that. Everyone wants this stuff to be incredibly easy. I don't see a problem with moving towards something like that. I just worry about the permanency of it and the fact that maybe the reason people aren't doing that with Xbox is because they just don't know if that stuff's going to go away.
Yes,
and
definitely.
When it comes to content, I mean, that's going to depend on what they do for the next generation because, you know, they have game scouts. They work on the next generation of games. They'll have stuff that they've commissioned to be like a launch title game, stuff like that for whatever the next thing is. Mm-hmm. If there isn't a hardware to launch, you don't have new launch titles, they're just going to have to invest that in new IPs. Mm-hmm. So and making their own studios. However, you know, then you have to build studios, then you have to keep them alive.
Which is the thing that they've kind of failed at for the last few years.
The thing that every game studio has failed at for the last two.
Yeah, so, and then they've had some of the biggest layoffs as well, like whether it's on the Activision side or other specific Xbox studios. But yeah, that whole idea of like trying to hang all of this stuff on a catalog of games, I think it's the wider promise of a variety of games each month at the curated Game Pass selection versus what is assumedly now an old school way of thinking.
Is that misunderstanding the gamer though? Like, we are gamers and you guys in particular are variety gamers. So you're used to playing 8 different things at a time.
Yes.
I work with indie devs who are used to playing like a cute little platformer and then a Metroidvania and then a something else and something else and something else. But what is everybody doing? Mm. Is everyone just playing Call of Duty? Is everybody just playing one game a year, or they get that one Assassin's Creed game a year and that's what they do and that's what they get? In which case, you don't need to spend all this money to have access to 90 games.
Yes.
If all you really do is play that one game.
Yeah, that's a big part of it.
Or you want a live service game, like an MMO, you literally just do that. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't make sense for everybody. So they would have to diversify to make this make sense for more than just what we perceive as being how to game.
I do think that's interesting because, like, over the years, I feel like the likes of EA have said they have all this revenue coming just from FIFA, now FC24. And yeah, like, a lot of people do just invest in Call of Duty year on year on year. But I feel like the big head-turning, like, middle talking points of the industry were so much more vast in generations prior. Like, everybody at least knew about Mass Effect, or everyone knew about Metal Gear Solid or whatever it was. And there was more of them. But obviously those franchises now take up so much of that space.
Yeah.
And it's like, it is interesting because I don't think the answer, like, is the average gamer, the average person who owns a console, are they checking out the majority of the Game Pass games every month or the majority of the PlayStation Plus games every month? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting to try and hang a whole business model on that assumption and be like, oh, well, if you just, you know, gamed more on your phone and then used it when you were on the train and did whatever, you'd feel this breadth of titles. I get the want to do that because it would put more games in front of people, but I'm just curious about spending habits and general approaches to gaming and the way the industry is. I'll be amazed if this actually does become the future Because I think you're right, Si. I think they're ahead of themselves again. Mm-hmm. And they were last time with all the DRM stuff and digital purchases. And they were 10 years wrong with that.
Yep.
But I guess we'll see. No, I mentioned Xbox portable stuff. Last thing is something that will be breaking as we're recording this. Marvel Rivals is apparently a third-person Overwatch clone, according to people who have played the closed beta. This is, like I said, I'll be announced by the time this podcast goes live. But apparently it's such a one-to-one with Overwatch. I thought we'd have a conversation with that. Because we haven't seen the trailer yet. We've only seen some of the leaked stuff, which was a character roster page showing Iron Man and every Marvel character you can think of, plus some other ones like Havoc or whatever. And it's that idea of the only differentiating factor is that it's a third-person Overwatch hero shooter. But what are either of your thoughts on the hero shooter model? Overwatch is 8 years old now. Overwatch 2 couldn't capitalize on Overwatch 1's success. Is this the move?
This is the reverse of the last story in the sense that they are behind. They are behind this one, absolutely. This would have absolutely killed it a few years ago, I feel like. But hero shooters are kind of dying off, and we're at peak saturation of Marvel everywhere in every kind, films, video games, whatever. They're all over the place. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I love the idea of it, but it is just the idea that I love. I can't imagine that I'll play this, I would guess. And I'm curious to see what it is, because is this going to be a Suicide Squad where it's just like, here are the characters, but the gameplay has got really very little to do with those characters. You'd rather run around as Spider-Man, they're going to be firing guns.
Oh my God, maybe.
What's it going to be? Like, how are they going to balance all these characters and all these abilities? Sort
of, like ability crossover, because maybe everyone needs a projectile, or maybe
maybe that's why it's taken so long, right?
Unless it's some weird alternate universe version of him.
Yeah,
but he's got little web balls that he's shooting at people. But apparently, this is a six v six game. But obviously, more information will be out there. But I just think it's interesting seeing various companies try and still chase the hero shooter model. Yeah. Like EA tried to do it with Battlefield 2042. Call of Duty tried it a little bit. And then, like you said, like Marvel is not in anywhere near as strong of a place as it was a good few years ago.
It's a kind of genre that needs a lot of support as well to keep it afloat. Like, it needs constant updates and stuff like that to support what will probably not be a massive audience.
No, this is also developed by NetEase, so I guess they'll be taking care of the long form tail on it as well. But Steve, your thoughts on the old hero genre?
Well, I liked the look of the artwork. Really nice. 90s and cool.
I'm not against it just yet.
I thought that would look really cool. I think aren't the kind of Marvel crazed.
How dare you, Stevie?
No, I mean, I do mean
we it, talked though. About Sonic at
no,
length.
No, but okay, I think we are... Oh, gosh. But yeah, I feel like it's a bit too old to get... I don't think that's what 17-year-olds are...
Oh, do you think it's more specifically like if you're doing a hero shooter, it's for a teen
I think if you're doing a hero shooter, then I think
it's
you're aiming younger.
For a particular audience,
I think you're aiming for streamers. Mm. I think you're aiming for the fresh, young... generation of streamers.
Mm. Okay.
I don't think they are into Marvel.
And
I
if think they are, we, those I think characters we are into, in Fortnite.
Yeah.
That's true.
I don't think that's what, you know, I think there's plenty of room for more hero shooters if that's what the thing continues to be, because they understand the model and that kind of thing. But I don't know if Marvel's the actual thing that would do that, or if it would be something like Squid Game or something. I don't know. So I don't even know.
There's a Squid Game area in Fortnite.
What are the kids into that's not mid? I don't know. But there's bound to be something that's hotter and fresher and cooler or more violent or more horror-based. That
you would
generation.
Think so.
That generation loves horror.
Uh-huh.
So if you thought about something like a Dead by Daylight kind of thing, which would work in that environment, I would see that being a much bigger hit than, you know, our generation. Oh, I get to be Iron Man. I don't think they care about who gets to be Iron Man.
No.
I want to see a bluey stealth shooter.
Do a bluey battle royale.
Yeah.
I feel like, I think it's interesting where it's out. You haven't seen any footage of it yet. And I'm not like default against it. I do think it's fascinating. Just all these different publishers trying to do an Overwatch, even though that was a certain energy around a property that was from 2016. And even Ubisoft, like they launched they tried to launch X Defiant. There was a beta. There was a lot of feedback to that thing. They were like, cool, we'll relax it. We'll do a lot of feedback and we'll come back, and then they've just never come back with it. So I feel like nearly all of the high profile hero shooters haven't made it out, other than Rainbow Six Siege, but that is like not necessarily classed as a hero shooter, but it does have specific characters, abilities, that kind of stuff. It's just an interesting place to be, and then after this much time has passed, doing an Overwatch with the Marvel characters.
I would love for it to be good.
Yeah.
I would love for it to be good. That would be cool. It'd be really interesting to see what it could become over the next couple of years if they do support it, because you think about Marvel characters tend to be like guests in other games and stuff like that. Imagine a Marvel hero shooter where guests from other game franchises come to hang out with them. That's quite a cool concept and a novel thing to do.
That's true.
So, I mean, Yeah, let's hope it's good. But I mean, it feels like it's got a...
We'll see. At the time of recording, we'll find out in 32 minutes when the trailer drops. But yeah, I'm curious. Like, you've got the Marvel 1943 Birth of Hydra game where it's Captain America, Black Panther. That looks really promising. Like, obviously, Amy Hennig's involved with it. So maybe we're rounding the bend on a more positively received set of Marvel games, because it has been quite a while. Well, it's been 4 years now since the Avengers game.
It's got to innovate if it's a hero shooter. There's got to be something else.
Midnight Suns is a
great game, but
God-tier
not many people
game.
Played it. But
no.
It seems...
Everyone listening to my voice, go play Midnight Suns. Yeah. That game's awesome. It's funny on PS Plus. For now, though, this is more. Okay. What? Sorry.
Is it? Oh, I'm off.
Yes, it is. For now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Stevie Ward.
Bye.
Joined by Cy White.
Bye.
And we'll catch you all very soon. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.